And you know, until yesterday when I started listening to Upins, and then all night, I have to say, I even funny dreamt little bits about it, but all night I've been thinking about memories that, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. And I would have never pulled them back unless I heard what I did yesterday.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to The Journey Onwards, where I look to dive into the stories from members of my family, both from my generation and the one before, to relive their incredible personal journey, from their memories of growing up in East Africa to leaving the town they grew up in and finding a new home here in the UK, along with everything in between. Now, for me, this is a chance to really connect with my family and the heritage. And I honestly appreciate that you've decided to join me in exploring this and to understand what life was like as a non-ethnic African growing up there. So on the first episode, I had Upin tell a wonderful story. Well, a lot of wonderful stories, but one in particular about an energetic cousin of ours who would cling to his brother, Satin, and wouldn't shy away from the chance to get involved in any form of mischief. And this week, I get to speak to that very girl herself, my dear cousin, Avni. So thanks for being here, Avni.
Hi, Anand.
Hey. I'm sure you'll remember more about me as a child, but one view I've always kept of you and one that's never really changed is how bubbly and fun-loving you are. Really just a joy to be around. And of course, you've raised two very successful and equally full of life daughters. I still remember when I came to see you when you lived in Malaga, and it was only for a day, but I always remember leaving thinking that I really wish I'd spent more days out there with you guys.
We wish that too.
Yeah, there'll be opportunities. I really, really hope to have those kind of experiences, because I just remember it being such a good day. But before we get more into life in Malaga, let's take a few steps back, and I'd love to hear about, you know, your childhood and growing up.
Oh, thanks for the the bubbly introduction. I was about 5 and a half when we left Uganda, so I don't think my memories are as vivid as Upin's. But I have some experiences. I think there are some points, you know, you remember and recall in more clarity than others. Yeah, so growing up, I remember the actual community, the feel of an extended family, living together, us sitting down, especially at lunchtime, every lunchtime, and sitting as a whole family and eating together. I think we've lost a lot of that now, which is a shame.
Do you mean as a family or as a society in general?
As a society in general,
yeah.
As a community. Even I remember when we arrived here, we went to live in Wales. And even then there was more of a community. Parents knew each other's children. You know, they got involved in the parenting of each other's children. And it felt there was always someone looking out for you. So you would literally come home and go out to play.
Yeah.
But I think it stems back to Africa and growing up there. In the evenings, we would go to the pier and go for a walk, and and some of them would go to the temple, and we could either join them or we could go along and we'd go along to the pier to get ice cream or makai, corn. Yeah. You know, they'd be cooking corn out on the street. And you could have salt, and they put chili powder and stuff on there. And so half the time we used to go out just for the treat of getting something like an ice cream.
Yeah. Treats back then being sweet corn. How times have changed.
Yes.
Were you able to kind of interact and play with all the children and those you didn't even know? You know, here there's often a fear about letting your kids go in the playground because people are just worried. But what was it like there in terms of, would you play with the locals and there wasn't much worry about you guys running around?
Yes. I mean, it was, you were open. We'd go out and play. Less so for me because I was so young. Mm. But if I was with Satin, we would go out. He and I would often go to Babu's house, you know, Lajibai, the Dani's house. And we'd go there and Babu would give us rotli with sugar and roll it up. And we'd go because it was another sweet treat for us. So I remember following him around a lot as a child.
I remember having rotli and sugar, yeah, as well.
And he would put me up to mischief. I know I heard a lot about it later on, and then recall a lot of it, because we had a teacher, Madame Cholera, and she had a monkey as well. And I remember that when we used to go there, sometimes they used to wind the monkey up, and when they wound it up, he could become quite aggressive. And then they'd go and he'd go and hide in a bush rather than be aggressive. And then they'd send me into the bush and I'd come back out holding him by the tail.
Oh, wow. You were a brave child.
I presume so. Or stupid, one or the other.
That's amazing. And so what was schooling like there for you?
I remember that we learned English, and it was the Queen's English from an early stage. So I remember learning Gujarati and English at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it seemed natural. I'd never even thought about it, to be honest. And I remember enjoying what we used to do and looking forward to it. And in the afternoons, we would have lunch and then we would sleep, which is the bit I didn't enjoy.
Yeah.
And then we would sometimes also have swimming lessons. The four of us would have swimming lessons in the afternoon.
On the pier?
At the club.
And was there...
They were adamant that we all learned to swim.
Yeah, we're quite a sporty family, I would say.
Yes, yes. That, I have to say, comes a lot from mine, Lena's behalf, from Dad. Yeah. I remember Dad playing cricket a lot, but I also, after that, when we came here, I used to walk and run with Dad quite a lot.
He was really good at cricket, from what I've heard.
Yes, and he used to tell us a lot about his cricket and how good he was. And unfortunately, it wasn't until he passed away and we met some of his friends at the funeral and so on that we realised just how good he was, you know. Yeah. Miss him. Yeah. Still.
That's incredible. You were saying earlier about you remember playing out on the veranda, was it?
Well, we had a courtyard between the shop and the house. And at one end of what I can remember was Fluffy's cage. Now, I remember Fluffy.
Yeah.
Because he was about the same eye level height as I was. And as soon as they let him out of the cage, he'd come bounding out. And the initial bounding out, he'd come up to you, and because he was same eye level as me, I'd be like, oh my God. And then you get up and then he'd calm down and then he'd play with you. And yeah, I remember that. And then in the evenings when we go for a walk, Prakash uncle or Dad would be there taking him for a walk as well. So I remember that a lot. And the way they looked after animals as well a lot. So if there was an injured cat or something, you know, they'd bring it in, they'd nurse it, and they'd put it in the stock room and look after it. And yeah. It was quite a nurturing environment, I have to say. We used to have a family lunch. So the mornings, as Upin had described, were quite hectic. Then we'd all have lunch in the mornings. They'd be cooking as well as running the shop and going to cash and carry or wherever they had to get a stock. But at lunchtime, we'd all sit down around a big table and we'd eat. And then usually in the after that, we would go and have a rest. It was the heat, I think, was the same reason that the Spanish do it as well, was a siesta. And I used to try and avoid sleeping. I didn't want to sleep. And Mum would go and give excess food to the guys at the front of the shop. There was a shaded veranda, of what I can remember. And they'd be carving wooden statues and animals and, you know, and they would always go and give food afterwards, excess food that was left over to the guys out there. And so I'd go with Mum just so I could not sleep.
Very smart. Do you remember much about the shop?
Not that much because it was, they had customers and things and we were kids. I think we were kept away from the shop a little bit because there was so much going on and it was a business. But I remember being in the stockroom. I do remember going in there, but again, it's vague. I remember more the animals in the stockroom. I remember the courtyard bit because we used to play quite a lot out there. I remember the house, the sitting room, the kitchen at the side when you go in through the back. Yeah, little bits.
Yeah, it must be incredible. Because I remember visiting, I went with Dad and he said it's changed a lot from obviously when he and you guys were there. You know, he knew exactly where the shop was and he remembered the exact walks they would went on. And there's still a lot of the artifacts, like the old post office there. There's still bits of it. It's just lost its paradise image that it once had. It didn't stop the story still being really clear in his head when he shared them. So Yeah, it's a nice thing, and I'd recommend going back. I think you'd have a flood back of a lot more memories as well then.
Yeah, I remember also out of the house and the shop, going to the cinema. It was like an old theatre, and also across the road from there. I think my life was based around food, but I remember them having, you know, the cassava, you know, potato, sweet potato.
Yeah.
And they used to make them into chips, and the guy used to be outside there, or across the road, and he used to. They used to be making it. But the thing is, you could smell it as well, so it'd make you feel hungry, you know. So I remember things like that, and how blush the cinema was more like a theatre than a cinema.
What kind of games did you play, and how did you guys have fun with the other kids, or even with the cousins?
My recollection of it, and I was very young, is just following Sutton around. Wherever he went, whatever he did, I used to follow, basically. So I don't remember the games as such, but I do remember that to ever or wherever he was going, I'd be like a little shadow.
Yeah.
The main ones I remember is going to Papu's house and following him there.
That's amazing. And do you remember much about leaving Ginger to come here?
Yes, I do remember leaving. I remember that we left with Ba and Minafoy, Mom, Lean, and I. And I remember, that's one of the most vivid ones I remember, recollections I have, is because we got to the airport and there were soldiers there. And they took us, our Mom, into a cubicle, and Lean and I were hanging on to Mom's leg. And at the time, they were just seeing whatever they could get off us, they were taking, you know, money-wise or jewelry or whatever. And I remember in the cubicle them asking Mom to take all her jewelry off,
wow,
to hand over. And we were holding on to Mom, and Mom had to take her jewelry off, her kanti, her earrings and bits and pieces off. I think she was left with a couple of gold bangles.
So they took all of it?
Most of it. I think she was left with a couple of bangles and something else, and they took that. But I have to say, the Danis, we were quite clever, in the sense we got the gist that this is what they were doing. And Mum had covered Lean and I in her jewellery, and then we'd have clothes on top. So nice. All the things we had, we managed to get across, that we wore. Obviously, all the things Mum had, they took most of that.
And were you ever scared?
The one clarity I do remember is the fact that I'd never seen, you know, I don't know what sort of gun it was or rifle it was, but I remember seeing a big, you know, rifle with me that he had.
Mm. Do you remember how you felt?
You know, when you usually go away on holiday and the aeroplane, the door opens and you get to that waft of heat?
Yes.
Well, I remember feeling the first waft of cold. For me, it was cold. And then about a few weeks later, when we arrived here, I got my first coat.
Did you land in London or Cardiff?
No, we'd landed at Heathrow.
Wow. And
your dad was there to pick us up. And then we went, here's a recollection. We went to stay with your dad and Chianti. And the one thing I do remember is that it was Derwent Avenue that they lived in.
Okay.
And shortly after, Chianti was pregnant with Seema. We used to be so enamored by the fact that she used to look so lovely. Mm-hmm. And she used to let us wear her high heels and try on her makeup and jewelry and stuff. We were, wow, you know, it was a lovely experience. Girly dress up time, so it was lovely.
Do you remember your thoughts about the environment, you know, the surroundings of just what it looked like in London compared to Ginger?
Yes, it felt a bit like it does at the moment. It was very, very damp and dark, as I remember it, compared to the blue skies of Ginger. You'd wake up most days and it would be blue sky. A bit like Malaga. I remember feeling that here a lot. It was, you know, colder, it was more damp. There was a lot of prejudice at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt it. I remember to a certain degree being one of the only dark, black, Asian children in the school. And we used to get a lot of names called at us. But again, I think throughout the Dattani family, we've always had an inkling of never make yourself a victim.
Yeah.
And so I had some full-on scraps with boys who called me names. Good old fist fights.
Oh, now I know where Talia gets her passion from.
Yeah.
Do you think the prejudice was more out of ignorance because they just weren't used to seeing people like us? Or do you think there was a bit more malice behind it?
No, I think it was ignorance. I think with prejudice, it is ignorance. Mm. I remember, you know, them saying, without even saying anything, that they said we all smelt of curry and things like that. And now you think everyone smells of curry because everyone loves the onion. But I think it was total ignorance.
Yeah.
And also they were, at the time, I recall the National Front being quite, you know, active, which didn't help at all.
Yeah. And so did you feel in general scared? What were your feelings overall and emotions at the time?
I don't think it was scared because we started growing up with it. And also we were lucky as a family that we could speak English, you know. And then we moved to Wales. And I think I recall there, again, we had to go through that same period again, you know. But it helped the fact that we'd already done it. And so we'd encountered it and in a funny way knew how to deal with it. So, and then just growing up, people realized that actually, you know what, we're all the same. Yeah. The shell may be different, but inside we're actually all the same. So that slowly happened. But it was a lot slower in progression than it is now.
And what was schooling like?
Yeah, we went to school in Cardiff, learned Welsh as well. So I remember when we were in Uganda, we were learning Gujarati and English. And then we had an Aya, her name was Maria. Mm-hmm. And she used to sing to us a little bit in Swahili and talk to us a little bit or teach us little bits of Swahili. Then when we went to Wales, we started learning Welsh as well. My Swahili and my Welsh are really bad.
Crossover sometimes.
Yeah, no. So, yeah, but schooling was good. I have good memories of Wales, to be honest.
Yeah.
We used to go out and play. Children used to come home from school, change out of their uniform and just head out. You were told what time to come in. And you'd be back for whatever time you were told to come in and eat. And then you could go out again. And in the summer, you'd be out till it literally got dark at 9, 10 o'clock. You'd be out.
Yeah.
No one would say anything and you just meet up. So you knew everyone down your street and the street next to you, and you'd all just play together, make up games, play together, you know. It was pretty good, actually, to have that freedom.
So that idea of safety and mingling with everyone in society and it being quite open, that was here as well?
Yeah, I think communities were a lot more open. I mean, I remember having the Queen's Silver Jubilee in Wales. And yeah, and everyone, I mean, we have street parties here for her golden jubilee. The street parties then were, I mean, everyone out, you know, and you knew people, you knew parents, and you knew if you were naughty and another parent saw you, you knew they were going to tell your parents, you know, so you're a bit more aware and a bit more respectful, really, in that sense, you know, that someone would see you and they'd obviously know your parents. So yeah, it was more community, I'd say.
That's amazing. I wonder why that changed. Do you feel you noticed when that began to change?
I don't know whether I noticed when it began to change, but since having children of my own, I have noticed that they don't have the same freedom and liberty as children that we had, in the sense that they didn't go out to play. We seem to put them in a car and take them to a club and pick them up, you know, from the club, and that was it. Whereas we'd run everywhere or walk somewhere if we wanted to go. I mean, Babu lived with quite a distance from us, but near us in Wales. And we just, in the afternoon, go, we're going to Babu's, and we would just walk. So, yeah, that was different. Yeah, it has changed. I can't say when, because I think going through my early 20s and so on, I had that freedom, so I never noticed it so much, that it was changing for children to be, you know, taxied everywhere. But I know that the next step was when I had children, it had changed.
Yeah, yeah. I'd love to get into the whole having the two wonderful children you have. But before we jump into that, are there any particular childhood memories or experiences that you remember or recall really well?
Yeah, I remember going to Kampala and Mombasa and stuff with Dad and Mom. And we had I think it was a family car. It was a Danus. No idea what make, model a Danus is. Yeah. But yeah, we had a Danus. And I remember when we used to drive, and in the distance, you would actually see giraffes. You would actually see elephants and things like that.
Wow.
I remember having monkeys all over our car one day, and we stopped, and Dad sort of quite cautiously got out, and we were giving, I don't know what it was, I think it was Sevmumbra, you know, the spicy sort of like crispy
noodle-y. Puffed crispies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Dad was holding me, and he was holding my hand out as well, and they came, and they were cautious as well. They sort of came and grabbed and then ran off again. And Dad said, whatever you do, don't close your fist, because then they think you're taking it away from them. When it finishes, just leave your hand open so they can see there's no more left, and they'll back off. And they did, funnily enough. But I remember him holding my hand and telling me, it's okay, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
So yeah, I remember little bits. I remember swimming with him in, and having an actual car tire around me when I was learning to swim as well with him. So some good things like that I remember.
Yeah. What do you think growing up in the UK or Cardiff in particular taught you that maybe you wouldn't have learnt or been forced to learn growing up in Jinja?
I don't know, because that's a hard one actually, because I my recollection of growing up in Jinja is still very, very young.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I would or wouldn't have learnt. But all I do know is that our sense of family was pretty strong in Jinja.
Yeah.
And whether it was distance that was the issue, that when we came to the UK, that we were all separated by distance, I don't know if that made a difference, because obviously we all lived in different areas, you know. I remember being in Barking and going in the summer to open in Sutton's house and spending the summer there. I have when we moved because we moved to Wales, and then from Wales, we moved back and lived in Ashford. Mm-hmm. And the summer of 77, we moved to Ashford. I'd gone to stay with Upin and Sutton for the summer. And again, following Sutton round like nobody's business. I remember Elvis had died in that August.
Okay.
And everyone was so upset that Elvis had died. And Dad was such a fan. Dad was such a fan of Motown, especially Stevie Wonder, and a big fan of Elvis. And people were crying everywhere, and, you know, a bit like when Diana died.
Mm.
Sutton explaining to me properly who Elvis was, you know, because I'd heard his music. Obviously, I had no idea that he was, you know, who he was.
Such an influence, yeah.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, and still to this day, I love Elvis.
Yeah. You make a good point about how we were almost, as a family, forced to separate because of the situation that happened in Jinja. But it's something that I mentioned to Upin as well. Even I remember us all living quite far apart, but when we would come together, you know, there wasn't that feeling of, oh, I don't really know you. There was always that immediate connection that we are family and we have something in common. And do you think that's something that has been passed down to us through Baba Ji and even just our parents' generation?
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we didn't really know. Once we left, I didn't really know, because they all came after me, was Sobufo's children, Alpa and Rubol and Meho. I remember going back with Dad, Minafai and Anish. Mm-hmm. Anish was a baby at the time. Going back for Prakash Uncle and Anju Auntie's wedding.
Okay.
I remember that we went down to Mombasa, and we just arrived, Dad, Minafai, Anish and I. And so we'd gone to look at the place, and Dad was bringing in all the suitcases into the house. And next minute I screamed because Anish had seen the bull and he'd literally just walked towards it and then carried on walking into it. I screamed and Dad was carrying suitcases just past me, literally just let go of the suitcases and just dived into the pool, shoes, everything on.
Wow.
Okay. And he brought Anish up and Anish was so happy. He loved it. He was like, wow.
Again.
And the rest of the time, keeping him away from the pool in case he did it again when we weren't watching.
I love that. And how was going into further studies and university and life as an adolescent or grown up?
I think we sort of, and this is one of the things I think the Dattani family have, and you know, you asked me one of the questions that what makes the Dattanis, why we've done so well. I think one of the best things about the Dattani families is that we have evolved with change. We accept change. And that's a lot of people, you know, I know it's good to hold on to our culture and all our beliefs and everything, but we encapsulate that, but we also weren't afraid to try and evolve with the new changes and incorporate them into our lives. And funnily enough, I think that's what made all the schooling and work and all of that easier for us, because we accepted it and evolved with it. You know, we didn't try and just keep within our communities. We didn't try and just hold on to our own culture. We did that as well, but we also were happy to put our feelers out and try other things. And I think that helped big time.
Was there ever a pressure or expectation on you to say go in a certain direction, or was that another thing that, you know, mum, dad were always very adaptable to?
Oh yes, very adaptable. Because Lena and I, from an early age, started dancing, and nearly every weekend we'd be away competing.
Oh wow! At
competitions and things, and yeah, and that was good. And Dad encouraged us. Dad encouraged us to do as much sport as we could, you know.
That's
and
great.
he would be the one who'd take us and bring us back to the competitions. Or and this was UK, we used to go up and down the country. You know, we'd get up at 5 a.m, catch a coach with our friends to go up to, say, Stafford or Birmingham or somewhere, or down to Cornwall or Devon to go and to a competition. And Dad would, you know, take us to where the coach was, early hours of the morning, and then we'd come back about 10 o'clock at night, and he, you know, he'd be there to pick us up. So yeah, Dad encouraged us a lot to do any kind of physical activity that we enjoyed.
Yeah, it's one thing that's really good. I think that as a family, there has been good emphasis on education and sport. And I think maybe it's because they didn't have the same opportunities. And so we were given what maybe they didn't have. And that was to explore more of these things that were available to us.
Yes, totally agree. I think they gave us the opportunity to do it and encouraged it as well. You know, so once you've got something like that, I think that's a big thing. You know, when someone gives you the confidence to try and it's all right to fail, then it makes it, you know, you're not so scared to try anything, knowing that you have almost a safety net behind you if you do fail, you know?
Yeah, I really like that. I like how you've said that a lot. And how do you think that shaped your situation as a mother? Let's go on to talk about the wonderful... I say young ones, maybe they're not so
young.
Yeah, maybe they wouldn't like to be called the young ones anymore. But yeah, tell me how that was.
Just about to hit 23 and 18, no longer
wow.
young. No, I think that, as I said, is the thing I feel I've passed on to them, is that I think they've both got confidence. They're both happy to walk into any room and you know, sort of mingle and talk and with people. The thing that really, really surprised me about both of them, and felt so proud about it, was the fact that when we moved to Spain, 98% of the children in their school were Spanish and spoke Spanish, and they integrated in incredibly well, which made coming back so simple because they knew the language here. But the way they did that, I was astounded at, to be honest.
That's true. I think... especially you having done that yourself, you know, kind of moving and adjusting to a new place. And I think that must have really helped in helping shape them to be able to do the same thing.
Yeah. You never think about it. You're providing that to them. But yeah, because when I look back and think about it, I never thought it came from me. I just watch them and think, wow.
Yeah.
And admire them for it, really.
That's amazing. Going back to, say, your mum, dad, what values or lessons do you really treasure from them? Or what do you think they've really instilled in you?
I think one of the biggest things they instilled in me is the fact that to give. They were both such givers. The way they help charities, the things they do. I mean, on both sides, mum's side and dad's side, we've seen how, you know, when they go over the line to go and help somebody. You know, when we had the shop, anyone who was quite old, dad would, after he closed the shop at 7 o'clock, and they'd been there from 7 till 7, you know, dad would still make an effort to go and deliver any, you know, old couples or whatever, or their food to them, because they couldn't carry half the time. And not everyone wanted to drive at that age, you know. And so dad literally would walk and go and hand out food and stuff. And whenever mum was cooking, dad would still go out and hand out food. We have one family and they were Indian, and the three children, and we used to go to school with them. And they'd lost their mum in a fire at a very young age.
Wow.
And every Sunday they'd come to our house to eat, you know, and mum would always still during the week send food over, you know. I think it's a giving. And one of the things dad always said to me is, you know, I'm going to get tearful, but give more to this planet than you take.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that's how I remember. But well, I look at both of them and think, which is lovely.
No, I really like that. I really like that. That's something that we are very giving. I'd like to think we are. I hear, you know, some families where there's a, you know, fallings out and kind of the more take than give approach. And I don't feel our lot have ever really had that. And I think that's what's kept us so strong. So mm-hmm. It's great to hear that you share that same sentiment.
Yeah.
Do you know more about how we ended up in East Africa in the first place?
No, but I was interested in this. From India to East Africa, I know that we went with the British to help with the railways and the businesses. And that's how we, as a family of the Dhanis, ended up with a general store, because that was our line of business. But I have spoken to someone again who was from Jinja, and she said that our name, how much of this is accurate, I don't know, because I haven't gone and investigated or learned any more about it, is that our name was Datta.
I've heard this somewhere.
Yes, yeah. We were Dattas, not Dattanis. We were Dattas first. So, do you know what? You've made me feel like I want to explore all of this a bit more.
It would be really interesting to know. Mm. Hopefully we get to the bottom of it. You know, I would love to go on to the final five fun facts, where I'll ask you five quick fire questions. But before that, are there any particular stories or life events or moments that you feel we haven't talked about that you'd like to share?
I remember that when we were in Wales, and behind the shop was a railway track, mm-hmm. and dad saved, I think someone was trying to, it was in a, I don't know, bag or something, someone was trying to get rid of some kittens and stuff, and dad managed to save a kitten, and it had the markings of a tiger. It was beautiful tabby, it was just absolutely beautiful, but again, quite feral. Right. And so dad kept it in the stockroom behind the shop, and it wouldn't go to anyone. And I'd go around there just to try and see if it played with me, and it would swipe anyone or hiss at anyone else but dad.
Wow.
And then when we had the shop in Ashford, dad got Mint.
I remember Mint, yes, I remember this name.
It was meant to be peppermint, and then it just turned out to be Mint.
Oh, okay.
A ginger Tom.
Yes.
Again, he'd sit in the shop, and when dad would do the papers, he'd always sit, and all the customers knew Mint. And then, yeah, and then I've had cats in Spain, and I've got another one here.
Yeah, we've had a few cats in our family. Very, very, very animal loving, which I think fits in well, because dad's told me stories about how when they were young in Jinja, and they used to run out into the wild, into the forest area, and they were always chasing like the lizards and whatever kind of animals they had out there. So.
Yeah, Dahlia did that in Spain. She caught a salamander, and I said, "There's no way you could catch a salamander, Dahlia. They're too quick." In her hand, surely enough, she opened her hand, and there was a salamander.
Wow.
They're quick.
Yeah, yeah. Impressive. Yeah. Okay, so on to the fun fire round of five questions. So start with the favorite food and why.
Favorite food, without a doubt, eggs. I love my eggs, honestly. Yeah. And I remember that being vegetarian, as Gujaratis and Hindus, we are not meant to eat meat or eggs or anything. And when we used to have a separate fridge for eggs, and we weren't allowed to have eggs in the house when Ba was there.
Yes.
I still to this day, I eat loads of eggs, and I think there's such a variety in it. And it's, I don't know why, I feel like it's a staple food. It's lovely, and you can do so much with it. So I'd say my favorite food, funnily enough, in nearly any combination is eggs.
And do you have a favorite combination of it?
No, I love eggs omelette, cheese omelette this morning.
Nice. Enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't go wrong, can you?
And tortilla, I've learned in Spain how to do a tortilla and all of this because I just love eggs. And it's so easy. It's such a quick food that you can make up straight away and you feel replenished when you've had it.
Very true. Very true. Second, what is the most romantic thing you have ever done, given or received?
Well, I have to say, more than done even, I've received with Chris was I first started going out with him. I received 100 red roses at work.
Wow.
And believe me, everyone at work, as well as me, I was, wow, astounded. Because, one, it's expensive enough on Valentine's Day, but to see this huge box come in, and then reception rang me and said, we have something for you. Went downstairs and couldn't carry it back up, so I had to leave it in reception until someone else helped me carry it outside.
That's incredible. I was going to ask, how did you manage to deal with 100 red roses?
Well, we didn't have enough vases when I took it home.
Yeah.
so also with mom and everything, we gave a few away, which was sad, but it was better than watching them die. And then I took a whole bunch and I dried them upside down. I hung them and dried them upside down, which I kept.
Nice.
Yeah. By far, that's one of the most romantic things. I was, wow, gobsmacked.
Yeah. I love that. What advice would you give to a 20 or 30 year old version of yourself?
Don't be scared to try.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with failure. If you learn from the failure, there's nothing wrong with it. I think because we were so new to this country, we were scared. And now I look back and think back, why? Why were you scared? You know, you should have taken the bull by the horns and gone for it, you know. But yeah, I'd say don't look back in 20 years, 30 and don't be scared. Try. No harm in trying, ever.
Would you have done anything different?
Yeah, I think I would have. I don't know specifically now what I would have done, but I think I would. I think the course of my life would have been slightly different.
No,
but no regrets really either.
Yeah, and I think that's what's key. Mm-hmm. Favorite story about one of the tiny siblings?
The brothers or the cousins?
For brothers or sisters, from a parent's generation. Brothers.
Well, one of the stories is, and I wasn't obviously a part of it because I was so young, but I remember when Dad passed away and I was with Prakash Uncle, and Dinesh Uncle, and they were saying that how they were not meant to swim, I think, in Lake Victoria. Mm-hmm. And Bapuji used to tell them that it was too dangerous to swim because of hippos and, you know, crocs and stuff like this. But Dinesh Uncle and my dad especially, I believe, used to love going to swim. Yes. And I think they both, in their time, saved a few people as well there. they were told not to. And Prakash Uncle was cycling past doing the round of delivery for the general store. And he saw your dad and my dad swimming. So they knew that he would cycle back and tell their dad. So they ran behind the bicycle. They got him off the bicycle and they threatened him. So that's one of the stories I heard, which did make me giggle because that just sounds so right.
Yeah. And now he's the tallest one, so I'm sure he can dish it back.
Yeah. No one argues with him now.
Yeah. And I mean, you said that you do have memories of Ba. How would you describe her in three words?
I look at Bath for very much of the matriarch. She was the matriarch of the family, without yes. a doubt. And so, and always calm. I never saw her get, you know, I saw her get tearful, but I never ever saw her get angry. And she was very collected, very, there was something quite serene, collected about her. And I'd say she was quite family orientated, you know. When she was around, the family were more together, made yes. a point of more coming together because of her. So I think she died the family in together.
Wow, that's so accurate. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, even, I remember growing up and Ba lived with us. And so I have some distinct memories of her. And she really did, you know. I feel we had a lot more people come to our place because Ba mm-hmm. stayed with us. But even personally, I remember she used to sneak Smarties to me when I had my nap time. So she was always all about her grandkids, which is us lot. Yeah, it's always a joy to have her around. That's really nice. And finally, you did mention this earlier, but if you do have something else to add to it, what do you think makes our family special?
That we are adaptable, and we've had to be.
Yeah.
And we've done it well, I think.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing up these wonderful memories, honestly.
Oh, that's
going
so good,
back, honestly,
it?
In the last 24 hours after listening to Upins, it's just opened up a whole load of different, you know, thoughts and memories that I'd forgotten about, and I don't think I'd have pulled back unless you'd done this.
It's amazing. Oh, now to have it on record, it's really nice to create a mm-hmm. sort of complete image. I'm glad it's brought back the same memories and sentiment for you that it's doing for me. So
yeah, definitely.
It's been a
definitely
pleasure.
Been good.
I'm sure it'll be one of those things from, you know, listening to more of the other family members speak, and then it will spark new memories. And I definitely am happy to do part twos and part threes and as many parts as there are gems of stories to tell. So
once we get together again for a, you know, birthday or something, we should literally all sit down and chat, because it would be, you know, they're going to remember so much about us, and we're going to remember how we saw them, and, you know, and each other for yeah. they haven't spoken about, you know.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. If you do think of anything, then we'll definitely do a part two. I'm more than happy.
Yeah. Okay. Take care.
Thanks so much.
Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening. I'm truly grateful every time I get to speak to one of my family members and get an honest and meaningful insight into the journey that they've been on, so that I can share these stories, lessons, and key messages with all of you, as well as the generations to come. Please feel free to reach out to me on anything you'd like to share or discuss, whether it's your thoughts or views on what was spoken about in this episode, or even to share the experiences from your own personal journey. It would truly be an honor to hear about them. Thank you once again for tuning in, and I can't wait for the next one.